Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 90. And Dave, I had a full plate of crow in front of me on Friday when we did the podcast. I thought the Steelers would get something done in the first 48 hours. They didn't. You seem to think they wouldn't get anything done in the first week, but they have been a little bit busy as we get some news this morning. And now it looks like two new defensive, I have to guess, starters probably for week one. In the fold. What do you think?
I think it feels like football season all of a sudden. this show definitely won't be a Seinfeld episode for us. Absolutely. We had a good idea they were going to most definitely address the linebacker situation inside with a budget fine. And when it came to safety, you're looking at that safety market, and boy, the inside linebacker market jumped out real quick there. A lot of signings, a lot of the names that we had listed as maybe potential fits with the Steelers at inside linebacker, all those guys went off the board for pretty decent money. And as far as the safety position goes, you looked at it and you said, okay, they missed on, Tyrann Mathieu. Who knows if they even had interest in him? And all you could read about there was, oh, the Steelers whiffed on not signing Tyrann Mathieu. But if you go back and listen to one really quote by Kevin Colbert back at the combine, talking about what he, the kind of player and position that Tyrann Mathieu plays, and then the kind of money that you thought that Tyrann Mathieu was going to want, it's not surprising at all that they didn't sign him. Instead, they laid back a little bit, a couple of days, and I guess we should get right to it and start talking about both of the signings in linebacker John Bostic and what we think is going to be a signing today in former Green Bay Packers safety Morgan Burnett.
Yeah, and I think there are two things to me that are very clear here with these two guys, and that if we want to draw similarities in the signings. Look, they've both been around for a bit. They're both smart guys. They're both guys who've dealt with a little bit of an injury history. That may make them a little more affordable in the bigger picture. Just if you're dealing with that, just the reality, can you stay on the football field, is a big characteristic that you can't always define for players. Sometimes a guy has an injury that is a chronic injury that it continues, the same type of injury. Or obviously in Bostic's case, he's had, four very different injuries. I think only one of them you would probably consider serious. Certainly the one last year, the knee sprain, probably wasn't very serious. But, that's factor one. But the more significant factor for me, Dave, is very simply one thing. You got two intelligent guys who can call defensive hit signals, who are probably, we would consider, excellent at communicating. And whatever the deficiencies you want to put on the Steelers' defense over the past 3 years or so, one glaring deficiency that they turn to as either a reflexive excuse or an answer or whatever in the locker room after their bad defeats consistently has been lack of communication. And we heard it after the Jackson. We heard it in the New England game opener 2 years ago, where you kind of throw your arms up a little bit and say you just had the whole training camp. You think you'd have that stuff sorted out. Okay, that's week one. You hear it in the Jacksonville game in week one of the playoffs, and you hear lack of communication. And for me, that's to throw your arms up and go, geez, what the hell is going on? I mean, that's really inexcusable stuff. So, there are lots of things to talk about with both these guys, and we'll get into all of them. But to me, that is as significant and important as anything that a characteristic that was added was intelligence and ability to communicate.
Yeah, and I'll add on top of that that both of these players are good against the run. And go back to what Art Rooney II said back in February, this run, we got to fix this run defense. And both these guys, Bostic and Morgan Burnett, last season particularly, had good run stop percentages. And we'll get into those stats here in a little bit. So, all right, now that we have the intro out of the way, I think what, and I got this tweet, I think from a couple of people after the signing of John Bostic, is the question was, how did so many people with all the names that were thrown out there at linebacker, how did John Bostic's name, you know, never
not percolate to the surface?
Right, not percolate to the surface. And here's my I'll tell you as Mike Tomlin says, the global the global opinion, and I'll go a step further and give you kind of my thoughts on it. Bostic, I think the fact that Bostic's injuries, along with the fact that there was no, after he suffered that knee injury in the Week 15 game against the Denver Broncos last year, they immediately placed him on IR, and he missed the final two games of the season. Now, there was no word. I remember going through a lot of these free agents and trying to check their injury history and all like that. At the time, there was no word of whether or not he had surgery on that knee. So I think the overarching thought on him was a strike through his name because, oh, he's probably coming off of knee surgery.
A significant knee injury.
Right, a significant knee injury that, he might be one of those June signings for a team once he's able to pass a physical. So, that, along with the fact that this is a guy that in addition to missing the final two games in 2017, he missed the entire 2016 season with that foot injury that he suffered as a member of the Lions, that he suffered actually during a training camp practice scrimmage with the Steelers there. So I think that's probably, that knee injury is one of the biggest things that it was probably easy for all of us to quickly mark, strike through his name. Because I tell you, when you go, now that he signed, sealed, and delivered, and you go back through his tape and you go back through his stats and all, it's a classic Kevin Colbert signing.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment of Bostic's situation. You know, he talked about it and very much, said he's 100% now. The knee injury, look, he could have come back for the last game, but, you're dealing with roster situations and, maybe you want to sign a guy that you would eventually sign to a futures contract, get him a chance to, be on the 53 or be on the 46 for a game day. Obviously, the Colts weren't going anywhere at the end of the season, so you can understand, why the logistics might have made sense for them to go ahead and do that. All of that made sense. And if you saw, if people saw the brief press conference that John Bostic had, he comes off as a thoughtful, intelligent guy who's, going to have an opportunity here. And the reality is, the Steelers fans should obviously expect both Bostic and Burnett to be in the starting lineup when they open the season, come September, whatever it is, this coming season. We'll get into the draft talk because I do think that becomes very interesting now. It doesn't lessen the need at the position. It lessens the immediacy of the need at the position. Look, inside linebacker is still, there's a depth issue at safety, and there's a depth and a potential quality issue at inside linebacker that, they still exist. These things aren't radically changed. But I think you can say, John Bostic's certainly not an upgrade to Ryan Shazier. John Bostic would be the first guy to tell you that. Nobody is suggesting that. But John Bostic is a massive upgrade to Sean Spence. And I think, the expectation is that Morgan Burnett, maybe not exactly the same type of player as Mike Mitchell, but at worst, the Steelers stayed level at that position now with a starter in the defensive backfield. So, we sit here and I don't think we're 100% pat people on the back and don't give criticism when necessary. But I feel very comfortable, and with certainly within the framework. We haven't seen the Burnett salary, the contract, how that's laid out. But certainly within the framework of the dollars that they had to spend after actually doing a lot of work in the restructure market, which they didn't do at all last year. They had to do a bunch of things this year. I feel very comfortable with the Steelers are where they are today versus where they were a week ago, and now kind of how they can approach the draft. I think I give Kevin Colbert good marks here on both these moves.
Yeah, and the early report on Bostic on his salary per Jeremy Fowler, we still don't have a lot of the much needed specifics to go along with it, but Fowler reported on Monday up to $4 million for 2-year deal, and that kind of sounds about right. And I sent a direct message to Alex and Matthew last night saying, boy, the Steelers sure did flush Bostic out quick. And, with the way that that inside linebacker market went, I'm sure Bostic was taking a look around saying, boy, I better get somewhere quick, and I better get somewhere quick where I might have a shot to at least open the season as a starter. So we'll see if those numbers that Jeremy Fowler reported hold true. I envisioned when he was signed, and I think I wrote in one of my posts that the deal might look a lot somewhat similar to maybe kind of a one that Sensabaugh or Tyson Alualu signed last year. And if Fowler's report holds true, then, potentially Bostic's 2018 cap number will be $2 million or less. And, what that means, it maybe moved the salary cap needle 1.01 to 1.6 or 7 $1 million right around in there. So you get a guy that comes in that's got with his season last year with the Colts specifically, called the defense. He was in every down linebacker, I think, before he went down injured in week 15, David. I think he missed like 3 or 4 snaps in total. He was on the field all the time. He is a guy that, although he didn't obviously have to do it with the Colts in his first couple of years with the Bears and the Patriots, he played on special teams. He's still young enough and able enough to do that. He is regarded as a more than reliable tackler. And boy, when you start looking at run stops last year, David, I don't know if you saw the post that I did on this on Monday. When you remember Joe Thomas talking about if you hold a runner to 3 yards or less, really regardless of the situation, he deemed that as a successful play. And I've written quite a bit over the years about successful plays and the 45%, 60%, and 100% classifications on first, second, and third, fourth downs and all like that. I wanted to look at John Bostic's run stops and his stats on stops that included a ball carrier gaining 3 yards or less. Okay, so you 3 yards or less. Now, if a running back gained 3 yards and got a first down or a touchdown or the right percentage of the yardage, we ruled I ruled that out as a successful stop. Weeding through that, I compiled his stats through week 14. In other words, through the game, up until the game against the Broncos in which he got injured, and then I compared him to all the top off the ball linebackers from around the league through week 14. And boy, John Bostic ranks right up there at the top. He had 39 total stops that included ball carriers gaining 3 yards or less. He had 15 of those were solo tackles. 30 of the 39, he was listed as either the primary tackler or the solo tackler on the play. And he had 7 of his uh, uh, 7 of those where he was listed as either the primary or the solo were tackles for losses. And if you look at the way I've got these things sorted and compare them to the guys that signed for a lot more money than Bostic did, I'm talking about guys like Zach Brown, DeMario Davis, Preston Brown. Let's see who else we have on this list here. Avery Williamson, Tahir Whitehead. There seemed like there was another one. Todd Davis and Anthony Hitchens. He really stacks up favorably through week 14 of the season to all those guys. And, of course, you know, assuming the salary that's out there being reported is correct, what a budget deal for him on a two-year deal. At worst, and this is at worst situation in my opinion when it comes to John Bostic, you have a guy that can be a backup linebacker for you, play both positions, can call the defense, obviously, and can play special teams for you. So it's a very low risk, I think high reward situation with John Bostic, especially against the run. Obviously, people are going to talk about him and his pass coverage. I thought he laid it out kind of nice during his interview with the media on Monday, saying, you know, he figures, you know, he thought he showed that he can cover back when he was with Chicago, running a lot of that kind of Tampa 2 stuff that really hasn't had the opportunity to do it as much, but he feels he can cover with the rest of these linebackers. And I think that's the part of his game, I think, that's going to be under the biggest part of the microscope heading into especially the start of this season, where right now you have to pencil him in as your starter alongside Vince Williams.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Definitely with you that the starter. So we haven't seen the information on Burnett. In fact, Burnett probably at this time at 9:30 in the morning here Eastern time, you know, he who knows if he's even landed in Pittsburgh to sign the deal. So, you know, we're assuming this deal is going to get done. Interestingly enough, James Jones, who broke the news on Jordy Nelson signing with the Raiders, former Packers wide receiver, is the guy who's got the information here. He's now working with the NFL Network. So he's got insight into his former teammates coming up with this news. And Dave, Morgan Burnett, you know, he's a guy whose name's been out there. And in fact, the fact that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu changed the calculus a little bit, certainly changed the conversation of what was going on in the safety market, because there were a bunch of names there that maybe none of them stood out as, okay, here's the elite guy. Then Mathieu gets released, and okay, he is the elite guy. And he'll be the guy who's discussed. He was discussed. I think we haven't done a podcast since he signed his deal. I think anybody who follows football pretty closely was probably a little bit surprised at the term and structure of his deal. Really, it looked like a one-year, $7 million deal. That's a deal that basically anybody in the NFL can afford, including the Steelers. Do a little restructuring, you can do that. But we talked about, you know, in discussing it with the Steelers, it's a clear upgrade at the corner position. When they signed Joe Hayden, you felt like that was still a massive position of need. You know, if you're thinking of Tyrann Mathieu, and you don't have to think of him this way, but if you're thinking of him as a slot corner, as we discussed on Friday, well, you know, that really wasn't a massive position of need for the Steelers. There were other places that were clearer needs. Now, maybe you think of Tyrann Mathieu as more of a free safety type, or maybe you think of him as a strong safety type. I mean, there are different ways to kind of – and he's a good football player. Maybe that's the most important thing. But, okay, his name comes off the board, Dave, and still all those guys out there. And, again, with Burnett, you know, you've got a little bit of an injury history. He's also a touch older than some of the guys out there on the market. He turned 29 in January. So, you know, if the Steelers are playing in the Super Bowl, he'll be 30 when the Super Bowl comes around. But again, a guy clearly, as Alex wrote about on the site, position flexibility is a key to what he can do. You can ask him to do a variety of things. But again, a smart guy, he can, you know, manage to get that secondary in the right spot. And that's something that, you know, we saw repeatedly. Didn't feel like that was always the case this past year. So I think he and Bostic, you know, you hate to compare players, play different positions and are asked to do different things. But I look at these signings as very similar type signings, with Burnett, the one difference being he's a bit older than Bostic is.
Yeah, and Burnett, has missed some handful of games during his career with injuries as well too. I think four or five last year with groin and I think it was
hamstring and groin. I think yep.
Yeah, groin and hamstring injuries there. Even so, in the games that he did play in, according to Pro Football Focus, his run stop percentage, his total run snaps and run stop percentage last season was 6.2%, and I think that has him something like tied for six overall for the qualified I'm looking at the wrong year here. Would help if I'm on the wrong year on the right year here. Hold on a minute here. Overall, he's been known about for his play in the box, and he is a versatile player. Alex has some great shots of him, guarding Jimmy. What's the tight end?
Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham. There, and how nice would it be to be able to to have a safety be able to do that against a tight end here? I'm trying to find Morgan Burnett. I don't think he didn't have enough snaps to qualify on their list. But going back through some of his other years there, he most definitely was a guy reliable in the box. He obviously can play deep too deep kind of situations. You can move him around, and the Steelers always like those kind of versatile those versatile chess pieces, if you will, and he is that. And we obviously don't know the specifics on the financials on it, but when you figure that a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, essentially what, $6.5 million base, and up to I think $7 million for 1 year, you have to think Burnett's going to probably come in about half that price, right?
Yeah, he's not coming in. He's going to come in under Mike Mitchell's $5 million AAV. So, whether that number's $2.5 million or $3 million, I don't know. I guess, depending on the flexibility where the Steelers are, I would guess it'd be under $4 million. So, yeah.
Burnett had a 4.4% overall total run stop percentage last year, and outside or within.
Put that into perspective for me and our listeners. I don't really know what does that mean.
Well, run stops, fell, like we talked about with Bostic, and this is how PFF defines run stops: a player's impact in a running game. Below, let's see, however, first number include number of tackles or passing plays. Importantly, did those tackles really count? Stops constitute a loss for the offense. So this table shows the percentage of stops per snaps played for the run defense. They don't quantify if it goes along the lines of the 45%, the 60% and all. I will look at that in a post probably later on today to see, how he ranks in kind of my system. But as far, when it comes to within 8 yards of the line of scrimmage of snap, as far as run stops go, Burnett had a, 4.8% stop percentage. Now, he's been much better than that during his career. Missed tackles.
I mean, so much of that is dependent on, the guys in front of you, if they're making plays. I mean, it's an odd stat, right, to get a great sense of I would think the closer you play to the line of scrimmage, the more important that stat becomes, right? Because if you're playing further from the line of scrimmage, if the guys in front of you are making plays or are not making plays, that impacts your ability to do one or the other, right?
Right. And I mean, obviously, if you're a free safety and 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, it's going to be,
you got no chance.
It's going to be tough, depending on the down and distance to register a run stop. Put it to you this way: he had 11 total run stops according to PFF last year. Jamal Adams with the Jets was the leader with 26, along with Rashad Jones of the Miami Dolphins there. So,
yep.
A guy like Keanu Neal from the Falcons had 20. So, and you also, you got to factor in now that he didn't miss, what, five games. He played, according to them, 249 run snaps last year, whereas the leaders such as Jamal Adams played 447, which is, you know, almost double of what Burnett played. So,
yeah, and you think about, just if somebody wants to just think about it on quick and dirty terms, an average team plays, just for round numbers purposes, you play 1,000 snaps on defense, right? You play 16 games times 60 snaps. It's usually a touch higher than that, maybe, but that gets you to 960. So there's your 1,000 defensive snaps, and you figure you're probably seeing 40% run, 60% pass. So you just work, if those are the numbers you're working with for a team, if you're just guessing, those are quick and dirty numbers for you to think about kind of how things work.
Here's a stat for you from PFF. Missed tackles against a run. Burnett had one.
Well, that's a good number.
And, boy, how many times are we throwing our arms up in the air? Oh, these missed tackles.
I'll still never forget that. I can't remember if it was a screen or a toss left where, you know, Mitchell and Sean Davis are both running by. Who's ever catching the ball, it was the play that just sticks in my mind. It will stick in my mind forever, wondering what the two safeties were doing on that play.
They have Sean Davis down for 8 if you're scoring at home.
Yeah, seems low.
I forget. Josh Carney did our missed tackles. I think he had Sean Davis probably a little bit higher than that. I think he's a little bit less forgiving on that. You know, John Bostic missed very many tackles. Very few tackles last year against the, you know, as a member of the Colts last season as well too. And I think all this, it's funny. You go back and you have the final result, and you go back and you listen to what Art Rooney II said earlier in the offseason. All this is matching up right now. You know, it's easy to it's easy to see why these guys that they have signed. And, you know, now I guess with that out of the way, we'll have, you know, more breakdowns of Bostic in coverage and Burnett against the run and in coverage. Of course, we've got plenty of time to do all that. But this is classic Kevin Colbert, right? You fill in needed spots with budget, you know, free agents. So it kind of loosens your hands up when it comes to the draft. Now, all this aside, I mean, you shouldn't be sliding safety or inside linebacker down your need list when it comes to draft, and it still probably wouldn't be overly shocking to see both those positions go one or two, or if both of them are addressed in the first three picks overall. It just kind of lessens the need to, I guess, reach, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I think you said it just right. And I think this is what's interesting now. I think this completely opens the draft board for the Steelers. I'll be shocked. Look, I've been standing here since, you know, November saying the Steelers have to go linebacker and safety with their first two picks. It's where they're going to go. I mean, it's clear as day. Okay, now what it means is, look, the Steelers have four picks here that matter up in the early. They have their fourth pick, right? They don't have their fifth. They have their fourth. Am I getting that right?
They don't have the fourth.
Okay, they don't have the fourth, they have the fifth. So they got three picks up top that matter here. I'll be surprised, not flabbergasted, but I'll be surprised if in those three picks they don't take a linebacker and safety. But it does mean if a guy like Gesicki is on the board, or a guy that they just fall in love with a running back, or if Calvin Ridley slides down and they for some reason think Calvin Ridley's the next, you know, the next Antonio Brown. It means to me, I would have bet $100 out of 100 that it would be a safety or linebacker before this weekend. I now won't bet that way. I'll still bet that of the top three picks, you go those positions on two of the three picks. But I think it opens the board that if there is some crazy guy who falls, whether it's a guard, you know, pick the guy, you know, almost, I would almost open it to any position on the board. I still would be absolutely flabbergasted if they took a quarterback in the first round. But I would almost open it now to any position on the board saying if they took a guy at that position other than quarterback, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, this was a crazy value of a guy who, you know, I can't think of a good example. Calvin Ridley is the best example I can think of, that a guy who everybody in the world thinks will go in the top 20. He shows up at 28 and you feel like, OK, you know, we can really add talent here. So that's how I see it. I still think they go with those guys, those positions, but I think you're right. It just kind of opens the board and makes it, you don't have to reach, as you pointed out early, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, you say, if, you know, if Rashard Evans is off the board, if the kid from Boise State's off the board and there's not a clear guy there and you don't love one of the safeties and there hasn't been a run on safeties, and I don't necessarily think there's going to be a huge run on safeties in the first round, you say, okay, we can get those places in the second and third round. We're going to take X. We're going to take Gesicki because we think he's a once every 5 year type of tight end, or whoever the guy is.
All right, now let's go back to another thing that Art Rooney II said earlier in the offseason, talking about he expects it to be, and it wasn't a shock, a defensive-minded, defensive-heavy draft, if you will. That's obviously not a shock. And then let's go back to what Kevin Colbert said when talking about the position groups at the Combine. You know, I don't know if it's a hint or not. We'll know, obviously, come the first round of the draft. But, you know, he said that he doesn't view the off-the-ball linebacker group as having a lot of impactful players. He did, however, say that you know, he liked the safety group and all. Now, I hate to keep bringing this up, and we'll see how much of this is smoke in the long run. But is there any... And I'm probably going to hit you with this. I've already hit you with this a couple times. I'm probably going to hit you with it about five more times prior to the draft. Is there any chance now with the signings that the Steelers have made so far, talking about Bostic and Burnett, is there any chance at all the Steelers would consider drafting Mason Rudolph at 28 overall if he was on the board?
I mean, I can't say no to these things in a quantifiable, like, absolutely no zero, but I think it's pretty damn close to no zero. I mean, I'm just not foolish enough I recognize the fact that, you know, anybody is on the board, and if this, you know, we're not going to know, we're not in that draft room, and we don't know. I just, with Ben having a couple years at least available, having taken Josh Dobbs last year, and having a little bit of a sense who he is, although I'll say we don't have a great sense of who he is, knowing Landry Jones is a capable backup who's in the last year of his deal, and I would expect it to be the last year of his deal if the Steelers, you know, then go quarterback next year. But you can re-up, you can continue to re-up Landry Jones at the money he's making almost on a year-to-year basis. Or, you know, certainly the type of contract he just signed is not, it is not an impactful signing on versus your salary cap. So I don't think Mason Rudolph is enough of a crazy talent to say, you know, because I think what you're saying, if you do that, and this is the reason I don't think it's the answer, is this is the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. We are going to take our shot right here because we like this guy so much. So that's why I think the answer is no. Do I think he'll be on the board? I think that's a coin flip as to whether he'll be on the board. I think, you know, I do think we're going to see all six of these quarterbacks go in the first round. Meaning him and Lamar Jackson being numbers 5 and 6 in whichever order they go. So I do think they'll all be gone. I really honestly put it at like, you know, 2% or less if you had to quantify it.
Boy, they sure had a lot of people, and you know, and we've talked about this. Why, you know, are the Steelers is there due diligence at the quarterback position? Well, obviously their due diligence last year ended up with them selecting a quarterback. Okay,
you got to do your homework. You got to do your homework across the board. These six guys, one of them might get cut in 3 years because they're perceived to be a bust. You know, maybe somebody wants to move somebody, and you're in a position 2 years from now where you're interested. So you got to do your homework. Yeah.
Boy, Mike Tomlin sure was looking at Mason Rudolph at that pro day the way little Finley looks at me when I get her food bucket out.
That I don't read too much into. So
I know it's the excitement of the playing Where's Tomlin and all those games that we talked about the other day, but I don't know where. The thing about, you know, if you can't get a guy like Roquan Smith, or you can't get a guy like the Edmonds kid out of Virginia Tech there, you know, are Rashawn Evans and Leighton Vander Esch slam dunk?
Let me ask you what I think might be the more interesting question. Is Mason Rudolph's on the board? Do you move back 10 spots and get another third-round pick if somebody wants Mason Rudolph? You say, so you go from 28 to, say, the pick, whatever you want, the seventh pick in the second round because, you know, the Jets or the Bills or somebody else is just like, you know what, we're going to go here. So you move back, you get, you know, you've got your second-round pick, you got this second-round pick, you get their third-round pick as well to do that. So you get two third-round picks because you don't have a fourth. Is that an attractive deal for you?
Well, I mean, you know, like you always say, the easy answer is no, because the Steelers have never traded out of the first round, you know. So, but, you know, a couple years ago we were saying they never take. It's been since 19-whatever.
Taking a corner in the first round, right?
Taking a corner in the first round. Here's the thing.
Let me phrase it this way. Would you move back 10 spots to get that fourth round, to get something better than the fourth round pick, because then you can address these, you know, some of these needs if there's a quarterback there? I mean, would you pass on the quarterback to add to the other needs because Ben's going to be around for a few years? I think I would do that.
Well, if I'm Kevin Colbert and I think Mason Rudolph can be the next guy. And, you know, I don't think there's a linebacker there that I like, and I think I can get a safety in round two. No, I think I stand put. And look, I'm not a huge fan. You know, after drafting my biggest issue, I think, with all this, David, if something like this were to happen, if Mason Rudolph was drafted in the first round, would be, why in the hell did you draft a quarterback last year?
Yeah. Well, right, because you didn't know Mason Rudolph's going to be sitting there. You didn't know you'd like him, right?
So right. I understand. There's a lot of devil's advocate, you know, way you can go. You know, you have to play for the now. You have to do the now because you don't know what's coming down. But that I think would be the biggest thing that would kind of make me kind of shake my head here, because, you know, in drafting Mason Rudolph in the first round, you get that fifth round option as well, that fifth year option.
Right, which is why that, just for the team, obviously for our listeners, you know, for the teams in the back of the first round in a quarterback heavy draft like this, if the Bills or the Jets or the Cardinals or somebody doesn't get their guy in the first round, they're going to look at the teams taking the last four picks and say, you know, they'll pay a premium for that because of that fifth year option. It's a huge deal. So, you know, the you know, singular benefit of being a late first round pick is that aspect that you still have that fifth year option. It's actually a cheaper option because you're further away from the top of the draft. And, you know, teams who don't get their guy, they may come a calling.
I've sat and envisioned Kevin Colbert sitting at that sitting alongside Mike Tomlin at that draft table, you know, meeting the media after the first selection, telling us that he told us so back at the combine, that they were not above drafting a quarterback this year. And maybe it's the madness of the pro day and all. Here's one thing we know: if they stay put at 28 there, you know, if it's not a guy like Mason Rudolph, then it's going to be a guy with uber, you know, spark score. You know, it's going to be an athlete that fits a perceived need, obviously. And look, I mean, neither one of us think quite. I mean, where would you rank the possibility, quarterback or wide receiver in the first round?
Yeah, I think I would put tight end ahead of both of them. And then I would, you know, I would, you know, I'm going to stay with where I was. I would put wide receiver there just because, you know, you look at the depth chart and there's no room at the end on the Steeler depth chart at quarterback. There is definitely room at the end on the Steeler wide receiver depth chart.
Yeah, there is. I, to be quite honest with you, I would probably rank it as far as I guess probability goes. I would rank it quarterback, wide receiver, and quarterback, wide receiver, and then tight end as far as those three positions go. There's just I'm getting a weird feeling about, you know, Rudolph and all, and hopefully that weird feeling ends up just being the beef jerky.
And you know, look, if it came down to Rudolph or Gesicki, you know, Gesicki's you know, his numbers at the compound. We saw what he did as a player this year, and I think that was kind of obviously his breakout season. And then you saw what he did at the combine, and you say, well, you know, look, I heard somebody, you know, comparing him to Rob Gronkowski. Let's not compare anybody to Rob Gronkowski because, you know, nobody is the type of blocker and receiver that is. But, you know, you think of, again, and just going on kind of what the Steelers talk about, what Ben talks about, having a big target in the red zone. You know, I don't know how much of an impediment that's been, but certainly this would give you a different, you know, it'd give you a, it doesn't matter whether the guy's a tight end or wide receiver in that respect. He gives you something in the red zone that you've been looking for, you know, since the rebound, you know, it's the second time through with Plexico Burress, with, you know, you looked for it with Justin Hunter last year. You know, you keep trying to look for it. Well, this would give you a guy who's going to be your tight end for the next 7 years, ideally, and give you that red zone target to boot. So, it's just again, when we throw names out, we're all going to look silly at the end of the day. But talking about guys who might be a little different than what we have focused on, which has been inside linebacker and safety, and it's, you know, again, nobody's focused. We're not focusing on them less. I just think it kind of opens up that, you know, that first 2 days. It opens things up where that other spot doesn't have to be now the third round pick. It could be one of the other two picks.
All right, let's put you this way. True or false, if the Steelers do not draft a defensive player in the first round, they'll draft a quarterback?
No, I still think it's no. Okay. I mean, you can ask it a lot of ways. You're not going to get me off.
You know, Gesicki, boy, his spark score was off the charts as well. Just to me, I think it the you know, I just try and envision him trying to get in and implement it in that offense fast enough, you know, like the Steelers like to do with their first rounders, you know, as of late there. And I'm not totally convinced he's a first rounder now. You know, the thing about safety, and the thing is, when you're looking at your own team needs and then you're looking at the top two or three players at those couple of positions, you automatically say, well, you know, these top two are at say inside linebacker and or really top, you know, I guess in the case of inside linebacker, a lot of people are trying to cram four inside linebackers into that first round, right?
We got what, Smith, Evans, the kid from Boise State, and who's the fourth?
The Edmonds.
No, the kid from Virginia Tech. Okay, right. People have him, you know, maybe going first in the top 10, right?
Yeah. I mean, what is the likelihood of four inside linebackers going in the first round when you think about it? I think you might get two.
Well, those two are going to be gone. I mean, I think I'll be surprised if Roquan Smith makes it to 20. I think Edmonds will be gone. He's young, very young, and athletic. So I think, you know, those two guys are gone at 20, and then Evans and you know, I have to say honestly, I haven't seen any of the kids' tape from Boise State, so I have no view on him. But, you know, Evans, we've seen, you know, Alabama's just been dumping linebackers into the league over, you know, the past 4 years. I would think Evans is probably a first round pick, but he could be there when the Steelers pick. It wouldn't surprise me.
I just the way Kevin Colbert talked about these impactful linebackers,
And then clearly, you talk about him as a run-stopping linebacker, attack the line of scrimmage, play downhill linebacker. That's what he is, right? I mean, that's...
Who's that? Evans?
Yeah.
He can play some out in space. I mean, he looks like a fit, you know?
Oh, I think he's a good fit. But I mean, I think you think of him I think of him first. I'll have to watch some more tape on it. But I think of him first as an attacking linebacker.
And when you look at the top, you know, three or four safeties, I mean, everybody tries, you know, trying to cram all those guys, you know, three or four of those guys into the first round as well, too. And even some of these kind of uber athletic guys we've seen in the past, these safeties, like even last year, Obi Mellon Fonwu.
Yeah, Mellon. How did his season end up, his rookie year? I don't have any idea.
Didn't he go to IR? Didn't he have some?
Was he down with the Texans? Where was he?
Raiders.
There you go. You know how I followed his season, how closely I followed it.
He five games played in during his rookie season. Drafted second round, pick number 56 overall. You know, I guess where I'm getting at this. Look, I mean, you know, I like Reed, the kid out of the Stanford kid, Jesse Bates III out of Wake Forest. You know, is it conceivable that one of those two guys maybe fall down? You know, as far as I think, Daniel Jeremiah have Bates as like a
back end of the 50.
Yeah, somewhere in that later end of the 50. And remember, Bates just doesn't have – he's young, you know, a kind of a guy that you think going to need a little bit of grooming. Now Reed, a very, very, very versatile guy, you know, seemingly high football IQ and all that. The Steelers have obviously had a lot of interest in both those guys. You know, I guess what I'm getting at here is, you know, and then there's the kid out of Memphis, the off the ball linebacker prospect that would be absolutely great as say a late second, maybe third round guy. You know, as well, a guy that just blew it out of the park at the combine as well, too. So, you know, I just wonder if it's still a Jannard Avery is the guy that I'm talking about out of Memphis there. Obviously not a first round guy, but you could probably twist my arm and get him in the second round. Definitely in the third round with him, a guy that would need a little bit of grooming, but has the tape and physical attributes to potentially be, you know, that guy inside. I guess what I'm getting at is and now that the team has signed, obviously, Bostic and Morgan Burnett, you know, maybe not such a slam dunk that the first round pick addresses either one of those two positions.
Yeah, I you know, look, I'm with you. They've opened the door to taking a guy, you know, if there's not a guy you love there. Again, I do think you've now, because you don't have that fourth round pick, if that quarterback position comes into play and you've got to move back six spots or whatever, and you get an extra, you know, an extra third round pick, yeah, that to me would be an attractive alternative to whatever. But again, I wouldn't bet on it. But it just, I think it brings all that stuff into play, because you don't have the glaring hole. Now you don't have the glaring hole that, you know, two of which you had a week ago.
Both of us would be shocked if Bostic and Burnett do not start the season.
Yeah, start game one. Yep, I'd be surprised. I'd be very surprised.
All right, so that lessens the load on whoever you draft inside linebacker and safety to get them in right away.
I think now the most interesting guy in the group on the defensive side of the ball becomes Cam Sutton. Where's he going to play? What's his role? Because he's not going to step in and start as the nickel corner. He's not going to start on the outside. You're not going to be a starting safety. So now what's Cam Sutton's role? And, you know, this is a third-round pick last year who actually saw the field some once he got, you know, the ability to be activated and healthy. So I'm and also, you know, known to be, as we've talked about kind of probably too much, a very smart guy. So I think he becomes the one of the more interesting guys defensively as to kind of how the Steelers are going to utilize him. And, we'll find that out. We should find out a lot of these things pretty early about how they want to line up their safeties and who plays what side. And, we'll get into that as Burnett talks some more and what, you know, when he does that later today, hopefully. But those now become the interesting questions. And when you add a guy, look, let's not – I don't want to make Morgan Burnett sound as, you know, the second coming of Troy Polamalu. He is a guy who is an experienced guy who's hopefully a bit of an upgrade, a slightly different player than Mike Mitchell. But Mike Mitchell was an NFL, whether you know everybody thinks so or not, he was an NFL caliber starting safety. So it's not going to be this massive upgrade, but hopefully it's an upgrade at what you have there. But the flexibility, and now with Cam Sutton, all of a sudden you look in the defensive backfield, and at least you can see, you can start to say, okay, I can see how this group might be improved. I don't want to say one guy and the difference between Mitchell and Burnett's going to do that, but I do think the flexibility, having another year of Cam Sutton, Mike Hilton's a guy out of nowhere who that was his first year of getting the real playing time. You know, the big key is obviously going to be the two guys who you bet your money on taking a step forward, a bigger step forward than they took last year in Burns and Davis. But you say, okay, at least, you know, yeah, it looks like you have at least the possibility with a new defensive backs coach, a different kind of focus, maybe a little bit of being a decent secondary, which I don't think they have been, you know, for 3 years.
Well, you would think with Gay no longer in Pittsburgh now, Cam Sutton automatically, you know, can jump in there as your dime guy, right?
And I would think that's the obvious thing, yes.
All right, and now with a guy like, you know, Burnett, and let's pretend Burnett's your primary strong guy, and they end up moving Sean Davis, you know, more on the back end there. Okay, you have the opportunity to play a lot more probably dime this year and pull a guy like Vince Williams off the field. And now, really, you know, depending on your draft pick and all later on in the season, you could put a lot of safeties maybe in that box, and you know what I'm saying? You could run a lot of defensive backs out there if need be that could also stand up against the run as well. So obviously Cam Sutton will, you know, can be your backup at both corner spots. You can, you know, obviously he can, you would think that he would be able to back up Mike Hilton in the slot as well. He can take over for the snaps that Gay played in the dime as well, too. So it really does give you a lot of flexibility. And you would think they're going to try to get Cam Sutton on the field as much as possible, though, right? You know,
I would think it's not, there's not a clear path right now, but that's five guys staying healthy. I don't think Cam Sutton's going to be moved to safety full time. I don't think that's going to be his role. But you got certainly the corners, and then you know playing the dime. So that's a bunch of different roles. So, but yeah, I would think they're, you know, it's going to be, it's look, Juju was a huge hit, a huge home run in more ways than one in terms of what he brought to the table. I think T.J. Watt was fine in terms of the production they got out of him as a first-round pick. And now if you can get something out of, you know, if you can get something, a significant contribution out of Cam Sutton, all of a sudden, you know, the draft class 2 years ago that we thought was so good in Arnie and Sean Davis and Javon Hargrave at the top three picks, well, you know, maybe I wouldn't say the bloom's off the rose, but we didn't see kind of certainly the two guys in the defensive backfield didn't see what we wanted out of them. All of a sudden, T.J. Watt takes a step forward, Cam Sutton contributes, and you say, well, maybe the 2017 draft class, the top three picks, maybe Kevin Colbert did better there than he did in 2016, which initially looked so promising.
Yeah, let's not forget this team probably needs to draft another edge rusher, early-ish.
Yes,
as well. And right now, with no fourth,
because that becomes the first pick of the next year's draft immediately.
Yeah, I mean with no fourth round pick currently,
it feels like a big hole, doesn't it? And that's why, you know, if they get the opportunity to move back for just, you know, five or seven spots, It just feels like if you could get another third round pick and you could add some more talent there, just that you know, we think about those picks when they get moved and you say, well, that's not much, and then you think about them when it's draft day and it feels like, good God, what, they gave away the store already.
They absolutely have to, in my opinion. I mean, we'll see if they're able to address. I mean, look, free agency for all practical purposes is over for the Steelers now, right?
You know, I'd be shocked if, you know, they get, you know, look, if they signed a Matthew Slater, we didn't bring him up, but look, if they signed a Matthew Slater for $1 million, that'd be great. But yeah, that's it in terms of, I think, named guys.
Yeah, I mean, any guy that you sign now, whether it be, you know, maybe
he would be a nice addition, wouldn't he? He would have been a nice addition at $1.5 million.
Who's that, Slater?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, and I joked about this on Twitter. Danny Smith have a bubblegum chewing party. and look, even the guy that they reportedly brought in, you know, let me ask you this. Do you read anything into the fact that the kid out of Miami, the safety, Michael Thomas, was brought in for a visit on Monday and left unsigned, and then all of a sudden Burnett, you know, it's reported he's going to sign a deal. If, of course, we'll never know the answer to this now, but it's one of those things that makes you say, if they could have signed the free agent visitor on Monday, was Burnett an option after him?
Who was it who came in on Monday?
Michael Thomas.
Oh yeah, Michael Thomas. Yeah. So you know what? That's a really good question. Probably not. But I feel like Burnett's a better player than Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas is more of a special teams guy. So I wonder if Slater and Thomas they're looking for a third spot. There's $1 million. There's a Robert Golden amount of money available to somebody to take Robert Golden's spot, and one of them happened to be a safety, one of them happened to be a receiver, but they're a special teams guy.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, had they signed Michael Thomas? Now, Michael Thomas does have a little bit of a starting. You know, he's a good special teams player, but it's not like he hasn't played on the back end before. You know, he's got a little bit of experience there. However, even if they would have signed him, you'd have to think it would have barely moved the needle on the salary cap meter, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, both he and Slater are looking at $1 million, $1.5 million in that range.
So then you bring up a good point that, you know, there's still a possibility that, you know, wouldn't have had to been an either or. It probably would have been, hey, we dump two safeties, we need two safeties.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Or we dumped a special teams player. We need a special teams player.
Right. We need a special teams player. So yeah, I think that's fair as well. I suppose they could add, you know, a special teams demon now at some point, regardless of position. They could, I guess, you know, at a minimum sign, you know, a veteran kind of, or you know, 4 or 5 season, you know, another edge rusher, because, I mean, let's face it, we don't think Arthur Motes is coming back, right?
Nope.
I mean, you do have Chickalo, depending on what you think about Chickalo.
Well, he'll be in camp. He'll be in camp.
You know, as being right now, I guess technically you're back up behind Dupree and T.J. Watt. Obviously you have Keon Adams, the late round draft pick last year that, you know, you just don't know what that's all about now. Obviously James Harrison, not coming back either. So, you know, probably the better bet is that position gets addressed during the draft, but where, you know, are we?
Well, the other thing is, you know, is Stephen Ridley or some other back, you know, I realize Fitz is on the list, but James Conner's health, just the reality of James Conner's history is, you know, his health is a question mark. Are you taking a back in the fifth round? Yeah, probably. But would you sign a back, would you sign Stephen Ridley for nothing? You know, he was sitting on his couch, or would you sign somebody else for nothing, just have another body there for training camp? So it'd be interesting to see what they do with that, not imminently, but kind of maybe down the road a little bit. And you know, if you signed Michael Wilcox, if you signed Michael Thomas, does J.J. Wilcox become expendable? I mean, if they, you wonder if, you know, you got, okay, you have Burnett, and, you know, we didn't really talk about J.J. Wilcox here when we're talking about getting guys on the field on defense. I mean, all of a sudden, if anything else you do in the defensive backfield, either in the draft or in free agency, even if it's just a guy like Thomas, all of a sudden Sensabaugh and Wilcox are at risk.
You know what? I mean, now that Burnett signed, how much value does that salary of Wilcox have now?
Has value. It has real value. I mean, you know, that's now. I do think, you know, if they were to sign Thomas, I would expect Wilcox to be out the door in a second.
Might Wilcox be out anyway? Yeah, you could really go to him now and put the clamps on him now, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll just go back to what I said on Friday. Look, they saw something to trade for him at that salary when they did. So they think there's something there. They also saw something that they didn't love. And, you know, the refrain again is, well, not enough time to get involved in and understand the defense as you got him just as, you know, camp was ending. To me, that's always a tough sell. I understand why it gets sold that way. But if you're telling me the guy's a dummy, okay, well, you know, he better be one hell of an athlete who can do a lot of things. And if he's going to make, you know, dumb plays on special teams repeatedly, you know, he better be one hell of an athlete. So, you know, maybe that, you know, the Steelers actually do believe that. Maybe they think he is a hell of an athlete who with a year to get the system under his belt, and maybe a slightly different system this year with the new defensive backs coach, he'll have a chance to blossom. But certainly it's one of the more quizzical things that's happened around the Steelers here the last 12 months.
Boy, it seems with the way they are in the cap situation they are right now, and obviously you know can be massaged further restructure or whatever. But you can't help but when you go down the list of players and look at the players under contract and their salary and their base salaries and salary cap hits this year, that $3.125 million base salary of J.J. Wilcox really sticks out to you right now. And even more so now that you've added Burnett, who, I mean, quite honestly, I mean, what you know, I don't guess you can look at Morgan Burnett's cap charge is going to be this year as a comparison, because obviously his take home money, signing bonus and first year base, we would think would exceed what Wilcox is set to earn this year, right? Will Burnett's base and signing bonus be more than $3.125 million? I think, you know, it's easy to speculate. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would think for sure.
Now, if not, you really can't justify. I don't think Jay. In other words, I hope J.J. Wilcox didn't decide after he made it past the new league year to
get the mortgage.
Yeah, to pay that mortgage off or whatever, you know. So it's glaring when you look at, you know, the most. And yeah, it's a good argument that J.J. Wilcox didn't have training camp, yada yada, thrown into the fire in his first quarter of the season there, didn't play overly well. But man, why the heck couldn't he get a helmet later on, you know?
We know why. I mean, it was pretty clear. He did some back-to-back dumb special teams penalties.
Well, but if you have value on defense, you can turn your head on those special teams penalties.
Yeah, they couldn't get him on the field. You know, so, and again, I'll just go back to that Bears game. He made a couple, you know, just missed making a couple big plays and was around the football. And so that's what, you know, that's what I saw and that's what I remember thinking, you know, this is going to be, you know, there's going to be an opportunity for him, and he couldn't find you know, look, a bunch of things happened, and he couldn't get on the field. And if Will Gay's getting on the field in front of you at age 50, you know, that's not a great sign for your future. So, yeah, it is, like I said, it's quizzical how this has played out so far for him, his career as a Steeler.
And, you know, Hayden's you know, Hayden's getting up there in age a little bit. But, I mean, obviously, you wouldn't think he's going anywhere. He's made it this far now. He's not going anywhere right now. You wouldn't think that Vance McDonald, you know, talking about guys with kind of moderately, you know, decent salaries, you know, still going to be there. You know, if there's anybody that you want to kind of give a little bit of a pass to last season, it might be McDonald, right? Because of coming in so late and, you know, getting on the same page with Ben, yada yada, and then of course the injuries and all. I mean, when he was on the field, especially as a blocker, you know, he was fine, you know, but he did have the injuries. He did have the couple of early season drops, but we saw late in the season what he can do. And that's why I have such a hard time envisioning the Steelers spending a first, second, or third round draft pick on a tight end.
Like I say, I wouldn't put money down on any of those spots. But when we ranked them offensively, if they're in love with Gesicki, then great. As you say, look, maybe it turns out they're in love with Mason Rudolph. Maybe it turns out Calvin Ridley drops 15 spots. So, but you know, that's what makes it fun for the next, you know, month.
Yeah, absolutely, it will be. All right, pro days are ongoing. The Stanford pro day is this week. It'll be interesting to see. I think that's the same day. I think that might be the same day as the Ohio State Pro Day as well. And speaking of Justin Reed, the Stanford safety, he does have a pre-draft visit already lined up with the Steelers. So he reported that on an Instagram video a few days ago there. So that's not overly shocking. We'll probably see Bates III brought in for a pre-draft visit.
If they had dinner with him, they may not use one on him.
Maybe. I mean, I think odds are good. He's so young. I think you want to learn more about him, talking about Jesse Bates. So I think I'll put you this way. I'll be shocked if Bates is not brought in for a pre-draft visit. A couple of these inside linebackers, top ones, you would obviously expect. The thing going back to Rudolph real quick there is during his pro day, he good for him, even though it's bad for us. He doesn't reveal who his private workouts are with or who his pre-draft visit, but it sounds like he has more private workouts scheduled with teams than he does pre-draft visits. So, you know, should he not be brought to Pittsburgh for a pre-draft visit, you know, I don't think that amounts to that to a hill of beans, and especially if they end up being one of the teams that he has a private workout with. Now, all that aside, you know, James Washington is a top wide receiver in this year's draft, and he played at Oklahoma State as well. And the Steelers, you know, showed some interest in him at the Senior Bowl and showed some interest in him at the Combine. So all that flurry of action at Oklahoma State could have been more related to James Washington, or just as much related to James Washington as it was to Mason Rudolph there.
Yep, definitely a possibility.
Boy, Mason Rudolph sure beat the snot out of Pitt, did he?
He put up 450 in the first half, I think, in that one. They scored on every drive.
5 touchdowns, I think the 1 interception. I mean, didn't have to go far to scout him, did you?
You did not have to go far. I mean, that game was the low point. The nadir of hopefully for Pitt fans, that was the low point for the Narduzzi defenses.
What are they going to be like next year, Pitt?
Well, you know, cautious optimism, and they think they finally found their quarterback, so that would answer a lot of questions.
Where's your cautious optimism with Pitt? As opposed,
8-4, man, is cautiously optimistic is 8-4.
As opposed to the Pirates.
Yeah. I mean, I just got asked that during the podcast, how many wins I put on the Pirates. And I'll just look, they're not the awful team that a lot of people in Pittsburgh want to make them out to be, but they're right at, 500, a skitch below 500. But if you told me Jameson Taillon and Gregory Polanco had superstar breakout years, you could see, 85, 86 wins and an outside shot at contending. But that means a lot. Look, last year everything went wrong. That would mean everything would have to go right. I wouldn't bet on either. So I'd bet on them being, right around 500.
All right. We've officially touched on it all now.
Yeah, we've got it covered. Penguins Islanders tonight.
All right. Good deal. Okay, David, you got anything else?
No, we're good. We're good. We got some fun stuff to talk about. Everything we say, we try to couch in as realistic terms as we can. I like these signings. I think the Steelers are in a much better place than they were on Friday. I think it takes a lot of pressure off on the draft of identifying one player to be specifically a guy who can come in and do something. I think it opens up some variables, the possibility of moving back in the first round if the quarterbacks fall. I think it was a good couple of days for Kevin Colbert in the front office. And Steeler fans.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Shazier injury aside, I think they've gotten better during the offseason so far, and that's what you want to try to do. Okay, in the meantime, tons of content still going up on SteelersDepot.com. Alex Kozora has a full breakdown of Morgan Burnett. The financials of all these players should be trickling in throughout the rest of the week as well, too. Keep you updated on that. Pro Day Circuit, pre-draft profiles on players continually going up on the site as well, too. If you feel like it, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, you can go to Steelers Depot. com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Feel like football season talk today, David. I enjoyed it, and you and I may talk again on Friday. If not, Alex Kozora will be with me.
Absolutely. Enjoy the week, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.